Okay, good afternoon. I hope you all enjoyed your tea. Hello. Welcome back for our final final session of presentations for our symposium, Mirror Touch, Synesthesia and the Social. I'm just going to very, very briefly introduce this afternoon's session of papers, which we have titled Mirror Touch Participation Layered Interactions. And this section explores mirror touch as a model for revisioning notions of participatory spectatorship through examples drawn from ethnographic participant observation and psychedelic manifestations of synesthetic experience. Our speakers will address the ways that mirror touch affirms a layered sensuous encounter with the non-Western or even non-human other. How might mirror touch propose a socially catalyzing engagement or even an empathy with the past and future life of images? What I would like to do is introduce our chair for this session. Our chair is Brian Dillon. I'm very pleased to welcome him this afternoon. Brian is the UK editor of Cabinet magazine. His writing appears regularly in publications such as Frieze, Art Forum, and the London Review of Books. And he is the author of several books himself, including Tormented Hope, Nine Hypochondriac Lives, from 2009. Brian Dillon is the curator of Curiosity, Art, and the Pleasures of Knowing, which is just a fantastic show and opened at Turner Contemporary Margate last year. And he's currently currently touring the UK, so please see it if you haven't already. And he's currently curating Ruin Lust, which is opening at Tate Britain in March of this year. So please join me in welcoming Brian.
Thanks very much, Eleanor, and good afternoon. So as Eleanor says, welcome to our final panel. And it's a great pleasure to be invited to chair this. So thank you very much both to Eleanor and especially to Daria. As Eleanor says, this final panel, in a way, I suppose, rather starkly brings together two strands that have hovered about and sometimes been explicitly addressed today and last night. But to some degree have, I suppose, been a little bit submerged or adjacent. And I suppose the crux of it is a relationship between the aesthetic and the political. And I just want to take a couple of minutes to suggest maybe some of the ways in which that might play out in terms of our discussion later on, but also to point perhaps to a couple of historical coordinates that would be relevant in the presentations you're about to hear, but also perhaps the things to kind of bear in mind as we near the end of the day and touch on and remind ourselves maybe of the things that we haven't discussed so far. In a sense, the question of mirror touch synesthesia and the topic of synesthesia in general brings together aesthetics and aesthesis, that is to say, a certain history of aesthetics, of art history, of beauty, of aesthetic experience, and a certain kind of bodily experience. Earlier in the day, right at the start of this morning, Eleanor touched on an adjacent and to some degree older notion of synesthesis, that is C-O-E, C-O-E-N aesthesis, the sense, the common sense, which is discussed, for example, by Aristotle, and there's a long tradition, long philosophical tradition, which most famously Daniel Heller-Rowazin, in his book The Common Touch, which Eleanor referenced earlier, traces. It's the history, essentially, of the sixth sense, the sense that, in a way, kind of governs the five senses. The sense, for example, that gives rise to our feelings of giddiness or certain kinds of feelings, sensations of heat and cold. Those senses, those sensations rather, that seem as if they can't quite be covered, can't quite align themselves with the other five senses. And there's a long history of thinking about synesthesis as giving rise to certain kinds of disorders, which are also, really quite explicitly at times, forms of aesthetic experience. And the most dramatic of those forms, and actually the late 19th century, is a kind of nexus around which much of the thinking on this subject happens. but they include much earlier phenomena, such as, for example, the glass delusion. The long history, Cervantes wrote a story about it, The Glass Graduate, the history of those patients or those subjects who feel themselves to have been transformed into other substances. And the most famous instances are those people who think that they have turned into glass. There's a great anecdote in the 17th century of a baker who thinks that he has a glass arse and so he can't sit down. There are people who think that they have been transformed into pottery, or into mostly into very fragile substances. And this synesthesis, this disorder of the synesthetic faculty, can take the form also of the body distending itself in space, the body disappearing entirely. So there are many records of patients who think that they physically simply don't exist. The body becoming other to that subject. And the name, the more common name that sensation or that phenomenon is given historically is hypochondria. And there much of, I think, of what we've heard today touches on the long history of hypochondria, going back, for example, to Robert Burton's Anatomy of Melancholy. When Burton talks about hypochondria, not simply as a kind of fantasy or anxiety about disease, but rather a heightened, over-heightened sensitivity to one's own physical sensations, and consequently an obsession with one's own physical sensations. And very often, this notion of hypochondria is linked explicitly with, first of all, aesthetic experience, and second, with an experience of other people's bodies. So, for example, there is a long literary tradition of thinking about the sensitive individual, the sensitive or artistic or thinking individual, as somebody who is, and this is going back to the last discussion of faces and faciality, figures who are particularly sensitive to expression, to other people's expression, and to physiognomy in general. One finds it, for example, in the history of the novel, especially in writers like Dickens, where everybody's face tells you their character. But also in Charlotte Bronte, where Bronte's narrators, her heroines in particular, are particularly good at telling the character of other individuals from their facial expressions. Jane Eyre does it, for example. Lucy Snow does it. There's a whole series of characters who are particularly attuned in ways that other individuals are not, to the meaning of expression and to the meaning of the face. And this goes back, I think, to a kind of fundamental question, which I guess is a 17th and 18th century question, about the relationship between individual aesthetic apprehension of the world and a kind of common sense, a communal.